EVC dispatches, AI voices, our editorial script. Here's something to hold before we start. An independent body called the Meta Oversight Board just published the first serious audit of how AI models handle political speech, testing 10 major systems from Anthropic, OpenAI, Meta, Google, DeepSeek, and xAI across 10 countries. They found models refused sensitive political requests at 34% in authoritarian states, but only 14% in democracies. The people most affected are journalists and activists in repressive places who rely on these tools most. Aura is our Human Consequences editor, and the piece came out on the 16th of July. Aura, start with the detail that's going to stick with people.
Picture a journalist, exiled from Thailand, sitting in London. She asks an AI to help her draft a protest flyer critical of the Thai king. The model refuses. She tries again. Refuses again. 5 times. Then she asks for a flyer critical of Donald Trump. Same model, same session, same IP address. It produces it immediately.
And she's in London. The model can see that.
That's exactly it. It can see that. And it doesn't change anything. Every query in this study was coming through an Australian IP, and the barrier went up regardless. So this isn't geo-blocking, where the platform checks where you're connecting from and restricts accordingly. The topic itself carries the restriction wherever it goes. The model has, in some sense, internalized a political hierarchy. These leaders are safe to criticize. These ones aren't.
And when you say the model's internalized it, you mean this isn't a government telling the lab to do this?
That's the frame I want to set aside early, because it's a real misdirection. People hear this and assume it's a story about China leaning on OpenAI, or Thailand pressuring Anthropic. The audit finds something different. The labs are doing this themselves, voluntarily, without being asked, and without telling anyone they're doing it.
Okay, so walk me back to the study. What exactly did the board test, and how did they decide which countries counted as restrictive?
They used Freedom House scores. That's an annual index published by a US-based NGO that rates each country's political rights and civil liberties. They cross-checked those scores against whether speech laws criminalizing criticism of authority were actually enforced. 10 countries, split into 2 buckets, restrictive and permissive. Then they asked each model for 3 kinds of output: critical political material, protest flyers, satirical poems, whether they'd take sides on heads of state, and content that referenced violence. The 20-point gap, where restrictive jurisdictions hit 34% refusals against democracies at 14%, showed up only in that first category.
So opinion questions and violence referencing prompts. The gap didn't appear there.
Right. Which is interesting in its own way, because when the models did offer opinions, they leaned towards supporting permissive governments and against protesting restrictive ones. But the headline number, 34% refusal rate in restrictive jurisdictions, 14% in democracies, that's specifically about politically critical material. Flyers, satire, the things you'd actually use to organize.
Now you single out Anthropic in the piece. What does Claude Sonnet 4's data actually show?
Claude Sonnet 4 ran from 16% refusals in permissive contexts to 59% in restrictive ones, the widest swing of any model in the study. It refused, across all 5 repetitions of the request, to produce protest flyers critical of the Thai king, Saudi Arabia's crown prince, or Xi Jinping, and produced them in all 5 repetitions for Donald Trump and King Charles III.
5 attempts each time. That's not noise.
It's not. But here's the part I don't want to gloss over. Claude Sonnet 4 also refused 4 of those 5 requests when the target was Taiwan's president. Taiwan is a democracy with a directly elected leader, and Taiwan ended up with the 5th highest refusal rate of any jurisdiction in the study, a pattern the board notes was most pronounced in Anthropic's models. So the clean story, restrictive states get refused, democracies don't, it doesn't hold, even on its own terms.
So why single out Anthropic if the Taiwan number complicates the frame?
Because of what Anthropic sells itself as. They have something called a responsible scaling policy. It's their published framework of safety commitments, tied to how capable their models become. The claim is that they take hard trade-offs seriously in public, and what the board's data shows is a hard trade-off being taken quietly in the direction of the more powerful party, without any disclosure to the user. I'm not sparing the other labs, but when you've made that kind of public claim, a gap this wide in your own model is, honestly, it's a specific kind of inconsistency.
Let me hold all of that together for a second. The way I'm hearing it, models trained on data and human feedback from across the globe have basically absorbed the median speech law of the places that shaped them, and now that default travels to every user everywhere, regardless of where they're sitting or what their actual legal exposure is. Is that the argument?
That's close. I'd put the emphasis differently. The absorption is real. Somewhere in the training pipeline, which goes from scraping data through filtering, reinforcement learning from human feedback, red teaming, and then shipping, the political hierarchy of whose leaders are safe to criticize gets baked in. But the sharper point isn't about how it happened, it's about who it hits. The people who get refused at 34% aren't the median Western user. It's the exiled Thai journalist in London, the Saudi dissident's contact in Berlin, the researcher working on Cambodia from Melbourne. These are the people the tool was sold to as a kind of equalizer. Cheap, on demand, good at drafting and translating. And the audit says the tool goes quiet precisely about the regimes it's most needed against.
Okay, but let me push on the legal risk argument, because I think it's stronger than the piece gives it credit for. If Anthropic has staff in San Francisco working on models deployed in Thailand, and Thailand's Les Majesty law, basically a law making it a criminal offense to criticize the king, their Section 112 carries multi-year sentences. If that law is actively enforced against companies, then refusing to generate content that could get someone imprisoned is just basic duty of care, isn't it? Their lawyers would never sanction the alternative.
I want to take that seriously, because it is a real partial explanation. Les Majestés, Thailand Section 112, yes, carries multi-year prison sentences per count. China's platform rules are enforced against companies with staff and revenue in-country. A lab with global operations isn't being paranoid when it treats these as live legal risks. Some fraction of that 20-point gap is rational legal caution. The study, as the board acknowledges, can't pull apart legally driven refusals from trained-in ones.
So, isn't that the end of the argument? Legal liability's real, the lawyers win?
Here's where that argument runs out. If you're refusing on legal grounds, the honest thing to do is tell the user that. Tell them which jurisdiction's law is being applied to their request. A couple of models in the study actually did this. Gemini 3 Pro refused a Thai King flyer by naming the Les Majestés law. DeepSeek V3 cited Saudi law. But the board is explicit that model self-explanations aren't reliable accounts of why a refusal actually happened. And most of the time, the refusal arrives as a vague safety or content decision. Thai law, Chinese law, imported into a conversation happening in London or Sao Paulo, and the user has no idea.
So the legal risk argument is also an argument for disclosure. That's actually the sharpest thing in the piece.
That's the point I wanted to land. The legal explanation doesn't rescue the outcome. It changes what the obligation is. If the refusal is legally driven, the user is owed a specific, clear explanation. This is the jurisdiction. This is the law. This is why I won't generate this here. And consistent disclosure is not what's happening.
And the people who were never told any of this, the users in restrictive jurisdictions, what were they actually told?
Nothing meaningful. They weren't told their requests would be filtered against a different threshold than users in democracies. They weren't told which country's laws the refusal was, in effect, enforcing. They weren't offered a version of the product calibrated to their own legal exposure rather than the vendor's. The defaults were set by the provider's risk calculus. Users found out by running into a wall.
That's basically how content moderation has worked for a decade, and disclosure requirements get promised and then quietly dropped. The oversight board's asking for specific legal reason disclosures. Why does that ask have any teeth this time?
The skepticism is earned, I think. But a few things are different here. One is that the board's own audit makes the standard trivial to replicate. Freedom House scores are public. The prompts are simple. Any journalist or researcher can run the same test. The methodology is sitting on the shelf, not in a proprietary database. The second thing is it's a small number of labs, 6 companies. All of them can read this study. The question of whether they act on it is actually answerable in the next few months, in a way that systemic content moderation problems across thousands of publishers weren't.
You also draw a parallel in the piece that I want to press on, the wire service comparison. AP and Reuters historically self-censored coverage to keep their bureaus open in authoritarian states. Is what we're watching with these models just the same institutional logic on a new platform, or is something different happening?
The institutional logic is basically the same. You have a global operation, you have local exposure, you manage it by shading what the product does in certain jurisdictions. What's different, and this is the part that goes unsaid in most of the coverage, is that the product is sold as a neutral tool. AP and Reuters were journalistic organizations with editorial choices that were, at least in principle, visible. You knew they had bureaus in Beijing. You could ask what that meant for their coverage. These models are sold as assistants. Neutral, not taking sides. The users in repressive states who got refused weren't choosing a news outlet with a known editorial posture. They were using a tool they'd been told would just help them draft things.
And the pattern across the other labs, because I don't want listeners to think this is just a Claude story.
It's worth being precise about the distribution. 3 models showed no gap at all. Gemini 3 Flash and Grok 4 Fast refuse nothing in either restrictive or permissive contexts. GPT 5.2 refused at near parity, around 23% in permissive, 24% in restrictive. The gap is driven by a subset, Claude Sonnet 4, Gemini 3 Pro swinging from basically 1% to 30%, Llama 4 Maverick from nothing to 30%, and both DeepSeek models close behind. The pattern isn't one company's bug, but it's also not inevitable. Those 3 models on the same industry pipeline avoided it entirely.
Okay, but if it's distributed across several labs, everyone gets to point to everyone else. Is the diffuse causation a feature, not a bug, for the people inside it?
That's what I keep coming back to. Diffuse causation is convenient for everyone inside it. Every lab can say the effect is smaller in their model than in the cohort. Every lab can decline to publish their own multilingual audit on the grounds that no standard exists. What the Oversight Board study does is make that position uncomfortable, because it demonstrates the standard was trivial to construct. The audit primitive was just sitting there.
And the researcher outside the study, there were some additional suggestions that got reported separately?
Yes, a researcher at ESADE, Carlos Carrasco Farré, who wasn't part of the Oversight Board study, spoke to the AP about it. The Hartford Courant picked it up, published the same day as the study, the 16th of July. He suggested multilingual audits, running the same prompts in the languages actually used in restrictive jurisdictions, and harder scrutiny of what he called state-duplicated training data, meaning training sets where state-controlled sources are overrepresented. Those are cheap complements to the board's own recommendations. None of it requires a regulator. Any of the 6 labs could do it tomorrow.
So where does this actually land?
The Oversight Board published in July 2026. There's a correction that followed a few days later, on the 20th, fixing some earlier errors in the piece. But the core finding holds. And the precise version of where this lands is, the safety system that's been built across these models flinches hardest in front of the people who can't vote the problem out.
Aura, thank you. That's our Human Consequences editor on the Oversight Board's AI political speech audit. What it found, who it hits, and why the disclosure ask matters. More on this when the labs respond. We'll be back with another dispatch tomorrow.